Okay. So that was the work that was consuming my life for the last year. Okay, as far as my presentation goes, we don't have that much time because we have to stop in about 25 minutes. So I'm going to try to fire through this as quickly as possible, which is not going to do justice to some of the images that I'm going to show you and talk about, but we'll do our best. When I was thinking about this presentation, I was thinking, oh, you know, what kind of scholarly work can I present everybody to talk about how the effect of images in our culture and the psychology behind that and the different history of our faith traditions and how using images relates. And then as I was kind of thinking about that approach, I thought to myself, well, that would be a good thing to do if I wanted to make a presentation on making belief unbelievable. Because the truth is that in our culture, the power of images goes a very long way, and images are relatively simple. So I'm going to take a slightly different approach to the question. I'd like to use images that I believe are actually helping to make belief believable for many people, to reflect a little bit on why they do, considering our culture in which we live. Now, interestingly, we're living through an extraordinary moment of church history, which the movie sort of brought out, in which the most believable thing about faith, if you think about it, the best thing that faith in general has going for it today is a pope. That's an extraordinary thing. And as we've just seen, in a short time, Pope Francis has become sort of the main point of reference, spiritual and moral reference, for the entire human family. And what he does and what he says matters for a significant portion of that human family, whether Catholic or otherwise. I did an interview with a Canadian magazine a short while ago, and the title of it was Pope Francis, a Global Game Changer. That's quite the statement. So in light of this, I've selected a few of the most powerful images of Pope Francis to sort of be our focal point this morning, to conclude this morning, to help us reflect on the subject of making belief believable. Now, I do want to say something about this culture of images. I sort of take it for granted. We do live in a culture of images, largely because we live in a culture of commercialism. And businesses, organizations, different communities use images to communicate a message, for many different reasons, but mainly because an image can have an enormous impact on an audience, on people. A picture is worth 1,000 words, as the old saying goes. And that's because they tell stories. They tell stories quickly and effectively. And businesses have discovered this, have studied the science of it, and use it to engage consumers. Now, the level of impact is only compounded by the fact that images are shared so widely and freely in the world of social communications. So reaching a consumer directly is really only a small part of advertising today. The crucial factor is the level to which a business or a product can initially engage a person to the point where that person is inspired to share the image on their own media platforms and adopt the product as their own. The goal is to kind of spread the image organically, if you will. As one business expert puts it, people buy people, not products, necessarily. And so what we have here, first up on the left, is just sort of a web of all the different means of social communications today. And the sort of primitive image in the bottom right is just showing how if you reach one person, it's actually an avenue into potentially millions of people. And when each of those people in the picture on the bottom right controls a web that's in the upper left, you can imagine how powerful that is. Now, what this means is that image is very important today, and communicating images effectively is how you create and sustain the right image. And practically speaking, what this means is that businesses spend a lot of energy and resources to study what makes an image impactful, or, if you will, what makes it believable. So I'd like to look at some of those factors that we now know engage people and inspire people, and to see how they might help us think about evangelization in a new way. And ironically, and spoiler alert here, Pope Francis is sort of way ahead of all of us in this regard. Because as you have seen, and we'll see, he sort of embodies the best practices of visual communication without even really being conscious of the fact that he's doing it. Funny story, when Pope Francis, that image when he went to confession spontaneously, Scott Pelley called us, who you saw in the film, and said, "This is incredible, you know, these images, this is an amazing strategy for getting people to go back to confession." And he was asking, along with many other people, what PR company did the Vatican hire when Francis was elected that has just so drastically changed the image of the Vatican and of the papacy? And all of us are looking at each other laughing, saying, "Strategy? There's no strategy here. It's just him. It's just him." And it's as surprising to all of us who work very close to him sometimes as it is to the people who are you know, at the ends of the earth. So the result of his ministry, the images that people see of him, in some cases, they make belief believable, a lot more believable, either for the first time or again. The stories are out there. It's quite extraordinary when you hear some of the testimony. I don't know if any of you remember Cardinal Foley. He used to be the president of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, but he had this great line that I loved. "The Catholic Church has been involved in advertising for 2,000 years. We call it evangelization. We really believe our message, and we offer much more than a lifetime guarantee." So let's look at the factors that contribute to the power of images. What makes an image powerful or impactful? And then let's see how we can translate these into the life of faith for evangelization. The first point is authenticity. Today, people respond positively to images of others being themselves. We don't like sensing that things are being staged or forced. We value authenticity, the notion that someone is doing something because it comes from deep within him or her. There are enough examples around us of blatant image manipulation in politics, for example, that we have come to recognize and value the simple quality of a person being comfortable in his or her own skin. One indication of authenticity is spontaneity. An engaging image makes a person feel that they are seeing something in real time and participating in the unfolding story. No one knows exactly what's going to happen next, not even the subject in the image. But there isn't necessarily a metric for gauging authenticity in others. People just sense it in their heart. In the marketing world, using authentic images to pull at the heartstrings is essential for deeper engagement with consumers. Now, in the church, authenticity has always sort of been highly valued, a highly valued quality. We call it authentic Christian witness or testimony. And the measure of authentic Christian witness is not quantifiable. It's really a matter of faith, which is a matter of the heart. I think here of the motto of Blessed Cardinal Newman, cor ad cor loquitur. Heart speaks to heart. This is the human connection beneath the apparent value of authenticity. In more recent times, Blessed Pope Paul VI spoke about the importance of authenticity for evangelization in the modern world. In his prophetic apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Nuntiandi, in 1975, after the Synod on Evangelization, he wrote this: "For the Church, the first means of evangelization is the witness of an authentically Christian life, given over to God in a communion that nothing should destroy, and at the same time given to one's neighbor with limitless zeal. Modern man listens more willingly to witnesses than to teachers, and if he does listen to teachers, it is because they are witnesses." One of the most common qualities attributed to Pope Francis by Christians and non-Christians is that he is authentic. The word authenticity comes to people's minds. He is real. He is spontaneous. The heart speaks to the heart. And many people have been touched by the powerful images of Pope Francis simply being himself, being comfortable in his own skin. The picture that you're looking at here, this is the Pope and Father Ernest Simoni, an 84-year-old priest and one of the last survivors of the communist persecution in Albania in the mid-20th century. He was brutally tortured and imprisoned for many years and recounted the martyrdom of many Christians during an audience with Pope Francis when Francis visited Albania in September last year. The Pope began to cry during the man's testimony and then put aside his prepared text to respond to the priest's testimony. And then afterwards, Father Simoni knelt down in front of Francis to receive his blessing, but Francis picked him up really quickly and hugged him like this. Spontaneity, authenticity. The second point is relevancy and inclusivity. In our culture, powerful images are relevant and inclusive. Just as an authentic image appeals to the heart, a relevant image appeals to the mind. There's a lot to be said for being up to date with the culture and not living in the past, but being relevant means connecting with what people care about. Probably the most powerful expression of relevancy today is inclusivity. Our culture places a high value on inclusivity, and so images that are inclusive tend to stimulate more engagement. Now, in the church, being relevant is not really limited to taking selfies or gaining Twitter followers, as I've kind of suggested here. As important as these are, being relevant, for the sake of being relevant, accomplishes relatively little. Making belief believable requires taking people deeper. By using relevant means of communication, we can gently invite others to a deeper experience of God, of faith, of the church. Now, regarding inclusivity, this is really an uphill battle for the Catholic Church, for us. Generally speaking, people, especially young people, people in my generation, my friends, perceive the church to be exclusive. This is very disturbing, not only because it fosters an initial aversion to all things Catholic, it makes it difficult to even start a conversation, but also disturbing and more disturbing because it is directly opposed to the gospel and the pastoral attitude of Jesus. So we should ask ourselves, what image of the church have we shared with others? In his interview with the Jesuit journals, that famous interview that we talked about in the film, Pope Francis warned against the unhealthy and unchristian attitudes that project an exclusivist image of the church. He said, "Tradition and memory of the past must help us to have the courage to open up new areas to God. Those who today always look for disciplinarian solutions, those who long for an exaggerated doctrinal security, those who stubbornly try to recover a past that no longer exists, they have a static and inward-directed view of things. In this way, faith becomes an ideology among other ideologies. I have a dogmatic certainty. God is in every single person's life." In the picture that you're looking at, Pope Francis is with two of his good friends from Argentina, Rabbi Abraham Skorka and Omar Abboud, a prominent Muslim leader and a prominent Jewish leader in Argentina. The Pope invited them to join him at the Western Wall in Jerusalem on the Pope's trip to the Holy Land in May of last year. The three of them prayed at the wall together, and then they embraced. And at this point, when they're embracing, Rabbi Skorka said to the Pope, "We did it." Think about what this image communicates. Think of how relevant the underlying issues are beneath the image. Here's another picture from that same trip. This is the Pope spontaneously praying at the wall that divides Palestinian Bethlehem and the Israeli West Bank. Relevant, inclusive. The third point I want to make, the value of accessibility and clarity in an image. If an image is going to connect with a lot of people, it must be accessible and clear. People of different backgrounds and beliefs need to understand quickly what your community is all about. What is your identity? It doesn't mean that one image needs to explain everything in detail. On the contrary, marketers will tell you that a provocative image that leaves something to the imagination can engage a wide variety of people for different reasons. This is a good thing. But at the same time, the image should communicate something fundamental about your identity. This creates brand recognition. People will start to automatically associate your community with the fundamental ideas and principles embedded in your images. If you don't have a clear brand identity, potential customers will be confused about what you offer. Now, in the church today, we know that the new evangelization demands that we go back to the basics. We have to retrieve the fundamental components of faith and release the energy, the inherent energy of the gospel. Pope Francis speaks about this as going back to the heart of the gospel. In paragraph 36 of Evangelii Gaudium, his apostolic exhortation, The Joy of the Gospel, he writes, "All revealed truths derive from the same divine source and are to be believed with the same faith. Yet some of them are more important for giving direct expression to the heart of the gospel. In this basic core, what shines forth is the beauty of the saving love of God made manifest in Jesus Christ, who died and rose from the dead." And he goes on to say, "Before all else, the gospel invites us to respond to the God of love who saves us, to see God in others, and to go forth from ourselves to seek the good of others. Under no circumstance can this invitation be obscured." The heart of the gospel. What is your central message? What image are you communicating? How are the images of your community faithful to your identity? You really can't get any clearer than that. One of the amazing things about Pope Francis is his consistency. The powerful images that we have seen of him over the past few years are completely in line with what he preaches. The message is accessible and clear, and the result is that people are now beginning to associate the church with the heart of the gospel. Brand recognition. People are paying attention to this, and it's inspiring them. You saw the video clip of this picture here in the film. The Pope was leading a penitential liturgy in St. Peter's Basilica in March last year. And before hearing confessions himself, he decided spontaneously to go to confession. And you can think about the emotion and the imagination that this sparks in people. It was confirmed that this was the first time a pope had been seen confessing in public. And Catholic News Service, good partners of ours and good American organization of yours, their video clip of this is the most watched video they've ever created. It has 525,000 views on YouTube. Their second most has 190,000. That's unheard of for a Catholic video. That's unheard of. But you go back to the chart that I showed you earlier, the people sharing it, the people seeing it, what emotions this sparked in people, you know? The fourth point about images is they must communicate humanity and normalcy to be effective. People feel connected to an image if it reflects their own humanity. A powerful image will tell a story that a regular person can imagine themselves in. Today, the pace of technology can be overwhelming. And now there's an almost nostalgic desire for ordinary things with a real human touch. A good example of this in the commercial world would be, you know, small-scale local farming. People are sort of becoming in tune with that again. Or local craft breweries. I know there's a lot of those in Minnesota. But people kind of, you know, going back to the land and doing the simple, ordinary things. In the church, we tend to focus on the extraordinary things of faith. The mystery, the transcendence, the divine. And to be honest, there's a strong movement afoot in the church, you might even call it subversive, seeking to keep the church in that realm. And we can easily forget about the reality of the incarnation and the utter humanity of the Jesus story. Belief will not be believable for people today if it is completely obscure. What image can we, the church, project that communicates the ordinariness of faith and the normalcy of believers? I made reference to this kind of flippantly before, but the Pope holding his own briefcase was actually a news story when this image first surfaced. And everybody wanted to know what was in the briefcase. I can't remember. You have to ask Tom that this afternoon. Pope Francis is a Jesuit and is immersed in Ignatian spirituality. He has an inherent capacity to see God in all things, and this inspires his very ordinary actions. He rides the bus back to the guest house with the cardinals after his election. He pays his own bill at the hotel. He carries his own briefcase we just saw. He wears black shoes. He participates, as in this picture, with everyone else on retreat during Lent. He's not sitting on a throne removed from people. He's among his co-workers, the people who work in the Curia, participating in spiritual exercise, a Lenten retreat. Here's another picture that I love. This happens very regularly. This is the Pope having lunch with people at the house that he lives in Vatican City, Casa Santa Marta. I remember speaking to one bishop who it is literally a hotel, so the Pope has a room there, but people are coming and going all the time. The security people are just, you know, pulling their hair out because the Pope invites all kinds of people over without telling them, and it's just crazy. One bishop told me that he was staying there at the guest house, and he went down for lunch one day, and he was standing in line with his tray, like we do at the guest house here. And he sort of turned around, and there was a man in white standing behind him with a tray. And he said, "Oh, yeah, hello, Holy Father, nice to see you." And Pope said, "Oh, yes, welcome to my house." Here's another one that I love. But, normalcy, humanity. This is a picture of the Pope meeting with the Maltese president and his family and extended family. And there's a picture with the Pope and the grandchildren. Humanity, normalcy. We're running out of time. How much time do I have? Should we stop at 10 too? Okay, so 5 more minutes here. Okay, I'll go through this. Be positive. Images should be positive. People are much more likely to engage with an image that is positive. When an image pulls at the heartstrings, is exciting or funny or surprising, people are much more likely to share it. Common wisdom in social communication suggests that good news beats bad news. Good stories trump bad stories. Positive images can also add value to people's lives. If a person feels enriched or more dignified when they encounter an image of your community, they will remember it and associate your community with that sense of enrichment, again, kind of brand recognition. In the church, we have a powerful message to share of love and dignity for every single person. Because of our faith, we are sort of naturally people of hope and joy. Or are we? Not always, huh? How do we communicate our hope for the future and our joy in the saving love of Jesus? How do we capitalize on our fundamental message of love and dignity, which is meant to enrich people and bring a little more hope and joy into people's lives. This is a picture of two of the happiest people I know, Pope Francis and Cardinal Chito Tagle, who's the Archbishop of Manila, and hopefully Francis II one day. I love this picture. I'll talk about it in a second. But Pope Francis has given us a blueprint for his pontificate and for the Catholic Church in the 21st century, Evangelii Gaudium. The word joy appears in that document 110 times. And in paragraph 10, Pope Francis says, famously, an evangelizer must never look like someone who has just come back from a funeral. Let us recover and deepen our enthusiasm, that delight and comforting joy of evangelizing, even when it is in tears that we must sow. Just look at this picture and think about what it communicates. The highest ranking member of a community of faith, this is in St. Peter's Square, it happened totally spontaneously, greeting and conversing with one of 1.2 billion other members of that community. The highest ranking member and a lowly member, if you will, listening to her. And when you look at this, you think to yourself, you know, I think he would talk to me like that if I were talking to him. You know, he might give me the time of day like that. He might listen to what I have to say. It immediately creates a connection with your audience. People look at an image and they feel a part of it. It gives them value, dignity. And the last one here, the last point I'd like to make, humility. Now this one, you might be saying, where did you get this? Because you certainly didn't get it from the world of, in the marketing world or the business world, because humility is rather lacking there. This is one that I've just inserted myself because I think it's so telling of Pope Francis and so important for evangelization. And I want to go back a little bit. We've talked about, Father Tom talked about the Synod on the New Evangelization in 2012. And without people really, nobody was paying attention to the synods, right, before Francis came along. They were kind of things that happened. They came and went. There was, you know, 100 journalists there. Now it's thousands and thousands, right, because of what's happening. But that was still a very important moment, the Synod on the New Evangelization. And humility took root in the discussions that the bishops had at that synod. And it really expressed itself in the message to the people of God that the bishops released immediately at the end of the synod. It's kind of like a pastoral letter saying, this is what we've been doing for the last 3 weeks. I'll just read you a couple of quotes from that document. We should never think that the new evangelization, this is the bishops of the world. We should never think that the new evangelization does not concern us personally. The church must first of all heed the word before she can evangelize the world. The invitation to evangelize becomes a call to conversion. With humility, we must recognize that the poverty and weaknesses of Jesus' disciples, especially of us, his ministers, weigh on the credibility of the mission. We know that we must humbly recognize our vulnerability to the wounds of history, and we do not hesitate to recognize our own personal sins. This is my favorite one. If this renewal were up to us, there would be serious reasons to doubt. But conversion in the church, just like evangelization, does not come about primarily through us, but rather through the Spirit of God. This image is not only very powerful, but for anybody who knows anything about the church or fancies themselves an informed Christian, this is really, really significant. In November last year, Pope Francis went to Turkey and participated in a prayer service with his friend, Bartholomew, the ecumenical patriarch of the Orthodox Church. And during the service, he greeted the patriarch, who went in kind of for the traditional fraternal greeting, where they hold each other on the shoulders and they kind of go back and forth. But Pope Francis stopped him and bowed his head and asked the patriarch to bless him. Think about what that image communicates. What does this say to the Christian communities around the world? This is not really as powerful of an image, but equally, well, maybe not equally, but very significant. On a recent trip to Turin, just this month actually in Italy, Pope Francis visited a Waldensian temple, the first time a pope has entered a Waldensian temple in history. The Waldensians are a very small Protestant movement that the Catholic Church essentially tried to exterminate in the 15th century. Pope Francis took the initiative to reach out to them, went to pray with them in their temple, and asked forgiveness from them. He said, "On behalf of the Catholic Church, I ask forgiveness for the unchristian and inhumane positions and actions taken against you historically. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, forgive us." And this is him meeting the head of the temple, the Waldensian temple. Just kind of by way of conclusion, you know, Pope John the 23rd and the bishops at the council were very keen on reading the signs of the times. They knew that the church must read the signs of the times in order to effectively communicate and transmit the gospel, in order to effectively evangelize. And one of the signs of the times is the culture in which we live, which is a culture of images. So we can't underestimate the power of an image, of images, of what our image is. We also know at the same time that Francis has an uncanny ability to communicate the heart of the gospel to the world. And interestingly, the heart of the gospel is nothing new. At the center of the new evangelization is really an old story. So you have all these things coming together and you realize that the new evangelization might not be, you know, creating something new from scratch, but how do we recover the fundamental elements of the faith and communicate them in an authentic way, in a clear way, in a relevant way, in a positive way, in a humble way, so that what we believe will be communicated to the world? What it requires here is a great quote by this French novelist: "The voyage of discovery is not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes." Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sebastian, for that presentation. The monastic community noon prayer will start in a few minutes. You're welcome to exit out this way. It's the quickest way to get to the monastery if you'd like. After that, you're welcome to go to lunch in the refectory, which is directly downstairs from where we are now. And we'll be back here at 2 o'clock for another presentation with Father Tom. So we'll see you this afternoon.